Uber is in trouble with the feds. You can now perform spinal surgery using augmented reality if you're a surgeon. We also talked to Sam Moscovich about all his favorite VR games, including one that makes you feel weak, vulnerable, and hunted. You're going to want to check that out. Coming up on Tech News Today.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Tech News Today is provided by CashFly at CACHEFLY.com.
This is Tech News Today, episode 1762, recorded Friday, May 5th, 2017.
This episode of Tech News Today is brought to you by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. When it comes to the big decision of choosing a mortgage lender, work with one who has your best interest in mind. Use Rocket Mortgage for a transparent, trustworthy home loan process that's completely online at quickenloans.com/TNT.
And by Tracker, a coin-sized tracking device that pairs with your smartphone and keeps you from losing your most valued possessions. Visit thetracker.com right now and enter promo code TNT to receive a free Tracker Bravo with any purchase.
Welcome to Tech News Today. This is the show where we tell you what's important in the tech news and why it matters. And sometimes we lie to you. I gotta come clean. There were certainly Princess Leia Star Wars figures when I was a child.
You just didn't know about them.
I didn't know about them. My sister took all of them. I was stuck with the droids. You insisted that they were, but you backed down because I was so forceful.
I
realized the power that I had.
There may have been a little bit of that for sure. I remember, after the show, we started looking, we went to this glorious place called the internet and started looking at pictures of all those action figures. And I recall seeing it. But when you were talking so passionately about it, I never had a Princess Leia action figure, so I didn't have that to fall back on. Mm-hmm. I was like, well, maybe I'm misremembering because my brain has made up a lot of things for my childhood. So
I am very powerful. That's what you call propaganda. I was spreading propaganda.
That was an example of how fake news spreads right there.
I want to especially thank David, who wrote in to correct me. And then I said I was sorry that I said that when it wasn't true. And he said he wasn't angry about the misinformation. He just wished that I did have one when I was a girl. That's what I wish, too.
Yeah, I do, too.
There's still a hole in my heart. I'm Megan Maroney.
I'm Jason Howell. Let's get to the news.
Okay. The United States government is launching a probe into Uber's Grayball system. Grayball was the code name that the ride-hailing company used to evade authorities in places where Uber was outlawed or not yet approved. According to the New York Times, the Justice Department is trying to determine whether Uber's use of social media searches, credit card information, identifying government-issued devices, and geolocation is illegal. The company has acknowledged the use of Grayball in letters to authorities. They say that it was used exceedingly sparingly. when someone's like using two adverbs together?
It was used really, 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 really not very much.
Yeah. Like two adverbs together really signals that really, really, really a lot that you might be lying.
Yeah. So the subpoena asks for documents that show how it functioned, also where it functioned. They say that indicates a criminal case, although it's super early right now. It's still kind of in the information, obviously, the information gathering stage. Grayball apparently may have also gone farther. I may have missed this the first time around. What Uber's terms of service say in a number of ways. For example, it could analyze credit card information and mine it for information. So it could then, see the credit card, know what credit union that card is for, compare that against what credit unions the police use, and then match it up and say, well, this is likely to be, a policeman or something. Also analyzing, and I think we did talk about this back then, but social media profiles to kind of compare it against, could they look at a social media profile of one of their users and determine that that is in fact law enforcement based on what they find there? And if so, Grayball in effect.
I mean, I understand that when you're competing with another company, it could be like a cat and mouse game. But this was with the authorities. The authorities would go get a bunch of burner phones to use to see if Uber was, you know, was operating in a certain area. So they would get a bunch of phones, and then Uber would go to the place where they bought the burner phones and then look up the ID numbers.
You can do that?
I guess so. That's what the New York Times said. Yeah, so it was just, think about how much taxpayer dollars were wasted trying to track them down and Uber trying to defeat that.
Yeah, that's kind of crazy. Grayball, of course, was shut down shortly after the New York Times expose piece. That was last March. So a bunch of people are calling it the Mike Isaac effect. He's the reporter who wrote about this in the New York Times. Apparently, he has a lot of influence because his article has started a chain reaction. And I feel like that was still early on in the avalanche of Uber bad news. And so here we are. It's moving to the next stage, apparently. YouTube is broadening its plans around producing original content for its platform, according to a report on Bloomberg. Alphabet is expected to announce its investment of hundreds of millions of dollars in more than 40 original movies and shows starring well-known stars and artists, Ellen DeGeneres and Katy Perry, just as a few examples. Unlike its original content produced for paying YouTube Red subscribers, this content is expected to be free and supported by big name advertisers. So basically just supported by ads on the platform. And they're really looking, reportedly, they're really looking into stars that have a global appeal. And I mean, we're talking a lot of money here. They're funding it to the tune of $3 to $6 million per hour of content, which, based on Bloomberg anyways, is comparable to HBO and Showtime budgets, what they invest on a per episode basis.
That's amazing. YouTube has more 18 to 49-year-old visitors during primetime than any TV network. So obviously that's where the people are, and including not just the young people, but, you know, we're in that age bracket too. So someone cares about what we're watching. Are you watching a lot of YouTube in the evenings?
No. No, I really rarely watch YouTube unless it comes up. Like, I don't sit down and go, I'm going to watch YouTube. You know what I mean? Yeah. It's not my destination. Things end up there. And throughout the course of the day, I probably watch a handful of YouTube videos every single day. But it's not because I went to the YouTube website and said, let's see what's on. Mm-hmm.
You know? Right. But it's something that you want to, like, if you're like, oh, that Saturday Night Live skit, you're going to watch
YouTube,
right?
Yeah, absolutely. Like, yeah. I mean, YouTube, you can't avoid it, right? Like, if you're on social media, I mean, how many videos are posted there? And that brings you to, and I mean, of course I go to YouTube because we have shows there, and I kind of check in on things and comment and whatever, but it's just, man, it's just such a different ritual than what my experience with TV has been. Now, having said that, I don't have TV, a TV subscription anymore. It's all kind of, cut the cord style content. So, you know, with YouTube TV, I guess if, you know, the YouTube live TV, which I haven't really used very much, but I've had a subscription to it. I use that off and on. It just really shows how much things have shifted, that age bracket during primetime hours is beating what is happening on TV. It's crazy.
Yeah. I mean, we've been using it to watch basketball. And I think we have a couple more days, and then our free subscription ran out, and I asked my husband, like, do you want to pay? It's $35. He's like, what? $35? No, that's too expensive.
You get a free Chromecast.
We have Chromecast built into our TV, totally. So we don't need it.
I got that email. Like, it was like, if you hold on for 4 more days, we'll give you a free Chromecast.
Yeah. I think it just depends on, I mean, to me, $35 isn't that much, but we've been not paying for so long. Right. So, and it's the advertising too. You get used to Netflix and you think, oh, why do I have to deal with these ads? And they have not figured the advertising out yet, because we were watching, I guess it was ESPN on YouTube. And for a while, it just says commercial break.
Yeah, they have to do that. There's certain things that are blocked out per region or whatever. You know, so depending where you are, certain commercials aren't licensed to run online versus just the actual TV network. Yeah. So I've definitely seen that on multiple services and not just YouTube. But in a story that I saw right before we came to show, sources are telling Business Insider of Facebook's own plans similar to this to launch its own original content offering sometime next month. 2 tiers of content there, marquee tier for longer, big budget shows, and then a low tier for shorter, inexpensive shows, 5 to 10 minutes that refresh every 24 hours. Just really goes to show between this and YouTube and, you know, Snap TV. I mean, they're all doing this content deal. Amazon's already been doing it. Netflix became the monster that it is because I feel like, you know, largely because of its original content. So apparently there's a lot of money to be made. And if you're a content creator, now's a really good time to be in the content creation business mm-hmm. because there's a lot of money floating around.
Absolutely. And the interesting thing about YouTube is that it is Ellen DeGeneres. Kevin Hart has a workout show. I love Kevin Hart. And it's apparently like people trying to do ridiculous workout routines and like the most ridiculous every week. I am absolutely going to watch that. I think it sounds fantastic. And nice. Then there are regular YouTubers that I know my kids are really into, the Rhett and Link. It's Good Morning something. Oh God, I can't remember. Good Mythical Morning. That's what it's
there
called. And the Slow-Mo guys. Have you seen the Slow-Mo guys there? And so that is just someone that made it on YouTube. Like those mm-hmm. are YouTubers that you can imagine on TV that are their content is a lot better than what's on regular TV.
What does it say about YouTube Red that this is happening outside of the YouTube Red blanket? I mean, I know that this report also says that they're also going to increase investment into YouTube Red content. So it's not like YouTube Red content is going away, but I don't know. I guess I would have assumed that. Well, but then now that I think about it, though, broadening it out, supporting it with ads, and proving to everyone, not just the people who are willing to pay for that content, but the people who are willing to sit through the ads, proving to them that YouTube is a player on the same playing field as all of these other, you know, new fangled content creators in a free way. That's actually probably pretty valuable for the YouTube brand.
Yeah. I mean, I think what it says about YouTube Red is that there's a generation of people who don't want to pay for subscription services. And so, you know, we think of Netflix, lots of people are paying for Netflix, but it's more people our age, you know, like I think you would talk to a lot of millennials who are like, I'm using my, you know, parent, 20-year-olds, maybe even 30-year-olds who are using their parents' password.
Well, fair enough.
Mm-hmm. So, you know, it's crazy too, because it's like, it's $9.99 like a month. That's easily probably like a third of what, you know, I don't know, a tenth, a hundredth of what you pay at Starbucks. So mm-hmm. yeah, but I mean, people pay for different things.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Microsoft says they're going to show the world what is next. They're going event crazy. Of course, they had their Surface laptop announcement this week, and Microsoft Build is next week. And then another event was just announced for May 23rd in Shanghai. We don't know much about the event except that Microsoft's Vice President of Devices, Panos Panay, tweeted and posted on Instagram about the event with the hashtag Surface. Since mm-hmm. the Surface Pro hasn't seen an update since the fall of 2015, we're guessing that is what we'll see. Although Paul Thurrott's sources tell him Microsoft will not change the Surface Connect power connector or much of the design at all, but there will be Kaby Lake processors inside, which is different.
Yeah, kind of a modest upgrade from what it sounds like after all this time waiting. I also see some people kind of wondering if the Pro 5 will actually get its launch at the Build Developer Conference next week. And then the Shanghai event might be more tied into kind of the local Chinese market. Specifically, apparently, VR, possibly. Microsoft had added Three Glasses, which is a Chinese manufacturer, to its partner list for creating VR headsets. And so it's, you know, very possible that it has something to tie into that. But I mean, but that wouldn't really explain the Surface hashtag at the end of the tweets related to the Shanghai event. So, man, who knows? All I know is Microsoft's really good at capitalizing on the news cycle, because three events in 1 month, it's like, and they'll continue getting, you know, all this coverage as a result mm-hmm. of it if they have something interesting to announce every single time.
Right. It could be a refresh of the Surface Studio. That is the big giant machine that Leo has.
Yeah.
Or it could be a Surface phone.
Yeah. Surface Studio, that would feel a little soon, but who knows? I mean, yeah, I'd be surprised to see that.
Mm-hmm. Someone also, somewhere I read, was hoping for a Surface Studio laptop. So I don't exactly know what that would be, because I thought
it would be a laptop where you can do this with your screen, take the wide. Just like the Surface Studio, you could go, Oh, wait, you can already do that with laptops.
Yes. What I would like to see is like a laptop with a screen this big. That would be awesome. Just carry it in.
Well, like, was it Intel or whatever at CES? The laptop with the screens that could fold out super far? That's the next that's the next step. Mm-hmm. Microsoft's going to be the one to make that, pull that off.
But seriously, though, they might have been thinking of like something you could use the dial with.
Yeah.
Although I haven't, I've never seen the dial in the wild. I haven't seen Leo using the dial, and he uses the Surface all the time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm sure it has its uses, but Apple and Amazon have had a lasting public dispute that has kept the Amazon video app off of the Apple TV. But now sources tell Recode that an agreement is in the works that would bring the app to the device by the third quarter of this year. Hopefully that means that Amazon Prime subscribers won't be limited to sending video to their screen via AirPlay, which is basically what they have to do right now. Once it launches, it would be a standalone app on the Apple TV. And apparently there's like a little back and forth here. Amazon had booted the Apple TV off of Amazon.com back in 2015. Also the Chromecast, just basically saying Amazon doesn't want to sell platforms on its site that don't support its own video services. And so who knows? Like, there's nothing in this report that says that that agreement would be made, you know, possibly in some sort of an agreement on both sides of this equation. But who knows? Maybe they've figured that out.
I'm excited about this. I mean, I have like a caveman getting out my old Roku to watch Amazon Prime on my Apple TV. It's literally the hardest thing to do in the world. Please,
I know,
feel
right?
sorry for me. I'm going to start a GoFundMe campaign just to deal with it. It's not that big of a deal. It's annoying. It's just, it's not, you know, you can AirPlay it.
Yeah.
You can switch over. There's so many ways. But, you know, and I get it that Amazon, like all these companies, they want to make the best contract. They want to get the most money for having their, you know, apps on different places. And they also know that it's hard. Like, they can hold out as long as they can. And as long as Tim Cook and Jeff Bezos keep it quiet, nobody knows who the one that, you know, is being more of a jerk about getting onto different platforms.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I mean, I will be excited about it. I think, you know, I haven't watched anything on Amazon Prime in a while. I think Hulu has sort of taken over that. There's not a bunch of stuff on Amazon Prime that I'm dying to watch that I can't watch on Hulu.
Yeah, I mean, and I think that's part of the problem is that Amazon Video just in general ends up getting somewhat lost in the shuffle. Meanwhile, they've had a video service for a very long time. Mm-hmm. It's just all, and I can speak from the Android side of things too. For the longest time, you could not install Amazon's video app on Android devices that weren't Amazon's devices. And it just never made any sense. It's like you're a Prime user, you have this library of video, but because it's so, like, you have to jump through these hoops in order to get the video to actually enjoy it, even though you're paying for it, you just forget that it even exists, and it's just a part of their service that it's just, you know, falls out of your brain. You never think to use it because it's not as easy as everything else to use.
Right. I don't think they make it easy to watch Twitch on Apple TV either, which is Amazon owned. I think there are other apps you have to watch Twitch through, I think.
Right.
Now, we've been discussing all of the venues of content, you know, Hulu and Snap and Facebook and YouTube. And I think earlier this week when we were talking about Amazon, I made the point that, you know, Amazon is the only company that also sells things like paper towels. You know, all these other companies are advertising companies in the case of Facebook or Google and or Snap or social networks, essentially advertising companies. I got an email from a user. He did not say his name, but user 21952. You know who you are. Because I made the point that that original content was being supported by all the paper towels that we buy. And he said that's actually not true. That there's very low margin on the products that Amazon sells. And what Amazon really wants is growth, not profit.
Mm-hmm.
And so I just thought that was interesting in that explanation. Because sometimes, you know, like the Leia dolls, I sometimes throw things out there that might not be true. We say a lot of words. I hope most of them are true.
So. Yeah, I would agree. I hope most of my words are true. But
yes. But you guys are really great at correcting us, and
we always appreciate
TNT
that.
At twit.tv.
For sure.
Addie Robertson at The Verge says the Microsoft HoloLens might let surgeons operate on your spine while they're playing Minecraft. I'm just kidding. They're not playing Minecraft. Kidding about the Minecraft part. Scopus is the first augmented reality surgical holographic navigation platform that integrates HoloLens into open and minimally invasive spine surgery. Robertson points out that the integration is even more precise than your standard HoloLens, with rigid body markers on the headset and tools for better tracking. So basically, they're using augmented realities to sort of put, I guess, screws or the things that they're putting overlaying onto your spine. It's pretty awesome.
So the HoloLens itself talks to the Scopus system wirelessly. Scopus would be set up somewhere else. And you can see some of those extra sensors on the hologram, or on the HoloLens. Those are kind of like added sensors to, I guess, improve kind of the tracking capabilities. Pedicle screws is basically using the system. Those are projected into the field of view and overlaid on the appropriate position on the patient, kind of like a landmark or a treasure map or something. I don't know. Kind of like thinking of it as a treasure map, actually. And then you can align the instruments based on the location of that visualization to kind of quickly determine where they need to go and, you know, just make sure that you're getting it right. The landmark is there. You just drop it into place. I'm sure it's a lot more difficult than that. It is spinal surgery after all.
It's good that it's
you just drop it into place. Yeah. It's that easy. Get not one, but two Scopus headsets.
No. It is hands-free too, which is good. You don't want to be like messing with stuff. So
yeah, you don't want to be playing Minecraft like a caveman with a controller while you're doing spinal surgery. Exactly. I mean, you want to do it hands-free. But hands-free actually comes in really handy because they have gesture recognition as well. Mm-hmm. So when the surgeon is focused, do some sort of a gesture and relate, you know, virtual monitors can kind of appear. It will put those into the field of view, but out of the way so that the surgeon can keep focus, but still have it over there to refer to. Mm-hmm. Very cool stuff.
Yeah, I think they should have it on Job Simulator, and then you play it enough, and then you're suddenly a spine surgeon.
Yeah, and you can get it like a certificate in the mail.
Well,
and
like the kid that learned how to drive on YouTube, I think. How hard could it be?
Exactly.
Of course, you can comment on anything we discuss. If you are a spinal surgeon or any kind of surgeon, you can tell us just how hard it is and how a couple hours spent in Job Simulator would probably not turn you into a surgeon. Email us at tnt@twit.tv. And of course, don't forget to subscribe to Tech News Today by going to our show page at twit.tv/TNT. And just go to twit.tv and subscribe to our other podcasts, too, in case you need something else to listen to. After the break, Sam Moscovich from Ars Technica is here for our gaming week in review. But first, let's take a minute to thank Rocket Mortgage, the sponsor of this episode. Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. It is great for geeks. You get your music online, your movies, your paper towels, as we talked about before. You can buy shoes and just about everything else on the internet. And you do it because it's easier, because you can shop on your own terms. So why not get your mortgage online too? I just recently got a mortgage. It was frustrating. It was time consuming. It does not have to be. When it comes to the big decision of choosing a mortgage lender, it's important to work with someone who you can trust and who has your best interest in mind. With Rocket Mortgage, you'll get a transparent online process that gives you the confidence to make an informed decision. It's like buying a piece of technology online. Instead of pressure from a salesperson who's just standing over you, you can take your time. Speaking of time, don't waste your time searching through stacks of paperwork. With Rocket Mortgage, you can securely share your financial information to get a mortgage approval in just a few minutes. You can even adjust the rate and the length of your loan in real time. Again, nobody's behind you, making you nervous. You're all alone. You can do it and take your time, take deep breaths, and make sure that you get the mortgage solution that is right for you. So whether you're looking to buy a home or refinance your existing mortgage, you can lift the burden of getting a home loan with Rocket Mortgage. Skip the bank, skip the waiting, and go completely online at quickenloans.com/TNT. That's quickenloans.com/TNT. Equal housing lender, licensed in all 50 states. NMLS, consumeraccess.org, number 3030. And we thank Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans for their support.
All right, we have a whole lot of VR to discuss. None of it involves spinal surgery that I know of. In this week's chat with Sam Moscovich from Ars Technica, who joins us now. Welcome, Sam.
Hello, hello. Happy to see you guys in the real world.
It's good to see you. You don't have any of that burn-in on your face this week. You obviously haven't been playing VR that much.
I took a bath. I took a VR bath. I went and just had my face. Here's the secret. Just put your head underwater and don't breathe for about 20 minutes and all the stuff will go away.
Oh, you just like wrinkle up like a raisin.
So when you say VR bath, it wasn't like a virtual bath. It was an actual bath to wash off the
VR. I meant a post VR. Yes, to wash off the shame that is going into a VR, a forced VR cave of existence. But yeah, there's a couple of VR things going on this week. Yeah.
Nice. All right. So first of all, let's start with Oculus. This was news that I thought was interesting. I think it was yesterday. Apparently shutting down its internal content creation studio. Tell us a little bit about what's going on there.
Well, this is a specific part of Oculus. So Oculus Studios is the internal developer home that makes stuff for Oculus Rift, all of their stuff, including the home kit, which is the Oculus Rift, and then the Gear VR, which is their collaboration with Samsung, and that takes your smartphone and all that sort of thing. Now, Oculus Story Studio is an offshoot. It's a special part of Oculus that develops narrative stuff. So stories that are not very interactive, but they happen all around you while you've got your head in VR. They made that content up until yesterday. There was just a notice that went up yesterday from Jason Rubin over at Oculus confirming that Oculus Story Studio was no more. And in fact, his post did not clarify so much as a Variety report followed up later on to say, oh, they're all totally done. Every single narrative sort of experience, meaning every sort of experimental story that was being developed inside of Oculus headquarters, was canceled immediately. And about 50 staffers were encouraged to apply for jobs at other parts of Oculus. So it sounds like it was a pretty sudden thing for them to say, yeah, we're not doing this part of Oculus anymore.
How much of an impact has Oculus Story Studio had? I mean, we've definitely seen some like immersive VR, you know, different approaches to VR storytelling. Is this an indication that it's just kind of not as big a deal as some might think it might be?
I would say it's the opposite. I think what's happening here is Oculus has noticed how many other people, independent, third-party, indie studio style groups, especially artists, are starting to embrace VR for storytelling. You guys talked to me right after South by Southwest, in which I saw After Solitary, which was an independently funded, nothing to do with Oculus story about a man who'd been in solitary confinement in and out for 5 years. And the story was just incredible. Oculus, on the other hand, I have never written about a single one of Oculus's narrative experiences. That's not to say they're not any good, but they haven't caught headlines. And a lot of these other sort of folks, including movie studios and small teams, are starting to do stuff. So what I think really happened was somebody in terms of bean counting said, we don't need to produce this internally anymore. Let's try something else. Let's try taking that budget and handing it to celebrities or handing it to hot sounding groups and say, hey guys, how about you take this thing you've been working on by yourself? We're not going to have you as a full-time employee, and you're going to make stuff that happens to be exclusive to Oculus because we handed you, I don't know, a $30,000 check or something like that. So I think that's what's going to happen, is that you're going to see narrative or semi-narrative things, the kind of stuff that, for example, they had an Oculus thing that won an Emmy last year. It was a short called Henry. You can get it for free on Oculus still at this point. It's a little porcupine having a birthday and feeling sad and then feeling happy again. It's very Pixar-esque, very bubbly and animated. I think they're just going to start paying other people to kind of make that stuff and then lock it down. So if, for example, Snoop Dogg decides to make a VR music video, maybe Oculus will go to him and say, hey, Snoop, Mr. Dogg, here's a bunch of money. Don't let Vive have it, and things like that.
So what about the VR for Good, that Creators Lab? I think we talked about it for you. That was under Oculus. Was it projects like that? Are those going to stay around? Are those outside the Oculus studio?
Those appear to be outside the studio. I think that Oculus really likes to say that they've got these initiatives where they're handing grants to people who are outside of Oculus. So I think that's all going to persist. Ruben, in his note, kind of talked about all of the different initiatives that Oculus is interested in terms of saying, look at how creative and for good and for advocacy and that kind of storytelling that virtual reality could do that other things can't. So that's not going to go away. It's just Oculus taking its money and sort of shifting it around and realizing having 50 people doing its own narrative stuff inside of Oculus is not their best value. I personally think they may lose some real opportunities for weird tinkering and a discovery by not having sort of an internal incubator for these sorts of things, because I do think narrative VR is going to continue to evolve. Just the idea of you being able to be inside of a film experience with your hands, and that's what Oculus has only begun to touch the surface of, because they have a thing called Oculus Touch. That's their newer product. It's the handheld controllers that didn't ship originally with Oculus, but they're trying to get people to buy it more. And I do think having hands involved in these sort of story scenes could be really interesting. But they had a virtual comic project that debuted at the Tribeca Film Festival just a few weeks ago, and we were going to get that later this year. That may not happen. So we don't know exactly how much fallout there's going to be for things that were in development and ultimately canceled. We don't get to hear a lot about what Oculus is cooking, the experiments that don't happen. I know there's a lot of those. So I personally can't wait for 2 to 5 years from now when sort of the archives of the experiments within Oculus's early days come to light. But some of those are probably never going to see store shelves as a result of this announcement.
Well, I know you might have been in VR for the last 2 hours, so you might not have heard this, but there was some breaking news that Mark Zuckerberg talked about a Facebook TV, like a new, just promising to have like a sort of a YouTube TV like thing for Facebook. Right. Do you think that's associated? Do you think that they're going to combine those two things?
It depends on who. I know YouTube also just announced an initiative of celebrity powered channels, and I would imagine that they're not going to be internally developing. I think Facebook wants, they know that the stuff that gets shared on Facebook is stuff that's made by other people that are known names. I don't think Facebook is going to create its own TRL. They're not going to have their own Carson Daly. They're going to find someone you've heard of and generate that content, I believe. But that's, you know, it's all up in the air, because again, how are we going to view this stuff? Is it going to be that 360 degree video stuff? If so, that stuff is not real VR, and it kind of sucks. If it's going to be totally polygonal, that's all. You know, I want to see what they're cooking. That could be very interesting, because that it could also be a money pit. Because if there's, you know, it's chicken or egg. You know, people go, oh, there's not content in VR, so they don't buy it. But if people don't buy it, there's no content. I'll be curious to see how that one shakes out.
Yeah, for sure. Let's talk about a few games. You've been spending some time with a game that released a few weeks back on the PlayStation VR called Static. Tell us a little bit about that.
Oh my goodness. So this is a game that I had not caught up with until this week. I had been reminded about it coming out. It's on the PlayStation VR. It's exclusive there. And the reason is it handles VR and limited VR in a really interesting way. Now with PlayStation VR, the way it works is it senses your head moving around, and it can sense the controller in your hands, as in just the generic DualShock, which is standard joysticks, buttons kind of guy, because it has a little light on the back of the controller, and PlayStation VR has a camera that senses that light. So strap on the headset, hold the controller, start this game. You're sitting in a chair. You're strapped into the chair. You're part of a crazy research experiment. And in your hands, what you see is not your controller. What you see is this crazy puzzle box. And as you tap around buttons on your controller, they manipulate and activate different parts of the puzzle box. So it really does feel like your hands are trapped inside of this box. Now, anyone watching the webcast can see right now a sample of this. So buttons, joysticks, triggers, they all activate different little spots. And there's a variety of these puzzle boxes. And you're just, there's a guy who's kind of mocking you, not really helping you out. And you're just supposed to sit there and figure out what the heck is going on. So the VR stuff is a mix of using your hands with the controller and looking around the room. So there's parts of it that make me go, it doesn't need to be in VR. We could just have the screen show this controller. But there's other parts that to describe them would spoil it. But to be able to be immersed in the environment is part of the puzzle. This to me is one of the most clever applications of virtual reality I have seen, especially in the sit down space, as opposed to stand up and walk around. I'm absolutely blown away by it. Anyone who's curious about it, do not watch it on YouTube. Do not stream it on Twitch. Find a way to play it if you enjoy Portal style puzzling.
It looks very kind of almost claustrophobic to a sense, to have your hands in this box and looking around. I did some reading around. People are saying it's very difficult. Like the puzzles are really difficult to figure out, and that some people are just like, I couldn't do it. I couldn't last as long as I needed to solve the puzzle because of kind of the claustrophobic aspects of it. Did you find that?
Well, there are a couple of spots where the logic makes no sense. So some of my favorite puzzles are on early goings, and they're incredibly good at having every single thing you need to know arranged around your virtual play space. There are other puzzles in which the step to take, once you go and cheat, and I absolutely, because the game's already been out, I got stuck at a couple points and cheated because I'm like, I'm not going to sit here for 2 hours to try to guess this. I would say there were three puzzles within an otherwise, I don't know, 2.5 hour, 3 hour game that made me go, what the heck is going on? But I think compared to some of the really weird and hard puzzle games I've loved in the past, that I would say is as tolerable a pain in the butt as I've ever dealt with. Right. So totally not, especially the early going. I think if you can get through the first couple of puzzles, you'll see what's going on and you'll be hooked. And by then, you'll do what I did, cheat just for that little moment. And then as soon as you see the solution, turn off the YouTube and go back.
Yeah, you kind of get your flow. Yeah, it shares a lot, I think, like right at the beginning when I started watching this footage, keep talking and nobody explodes, kind of that idea of having this box and figuring out what you do in what order and all that kind of stuff. So cool puzzle game approach.
And I will say, because of that, that one and this one are similar in that if you are stuck, you have friends who may be sitting on the couch. Not that you're going to have people over while you're playing VR, but if someone else is there, they can see on your TV screen what's going on and go, wait, did you notice this thing? Did you notice that thing?
Right.
And that's kind of clever. I was sad and lonely in my VR cave when I solved it myself. I wish either of you had been there to help my wayward soul.
It's too bad you couldn't play it on your Switch and bring it to a bar like you do with your Zelda.
Oh, goodness.
Someday they'll have
Sorry, you just
VR.
Said the S word and I go totally off if you
come
do
back,
that,
come so. Back. We've got one more thing to talk to you about. Finally, a new game by Bethesda called Prey. That actually hit the shelves today. What's to love about this one?
Prey, we have not had that much time to play it because Bethesda, the makers of Fallout and the Elder Scrolls Skyrim, they believe now that they don't need to give games to the press very early because they are very well known. Words like Fallout and Skyrim have a lot of cachet for nerds and even just people who are not giant nerds but like games. So we haven't played very much. Ars Technica has a piece up with Kyle Orland's first 5 to 6 hours. It's got some video on there. And it's interesting because the name Prey has been attached to a couple of games. There was a game, I want to say 10, 12, 15 years ago. I can't remember how long ago, but it was this sort of sci-fi meets American Indian story of exploring past, present, and future. And it was kind of action-y. And then it got rebooted and canceled. And I got to see a behind-the-scenes look at what this game would have looked like, and it was total Blade Runner, jumping between buildings, bonkers, high-speed, flashy neon. That never came out. This is the exact opposite of the one that got canceled. This is very slow. It's all about you being part of an institute that is giving you it starts out with a sort of Groundhog Day-style thing where you go in for training, things turn awry, all of a sudden you wake up again as if nothing happened, but there's just one little note saying, you are reliving a bad time, FYI, weird stuff is happening. That's not really much of a spoiler because that happens so early on, but it's just to say that is just one example of the game having things may not be what they seem as a major element. And ultimately, it's about being trapped in a space station, which is just completely dotted with stuff. And that is a very Bethesda-like thing and also a very Dishonored-like thing. The guys who made some of the people who made the video game Dishonored were a part of this. And one of the shortest ways of putting this is that little bit of Dishonored flavor where there's a lot of different ways to solve a crazy adventure is just smothered in high-gloss sci-fi. And that to me is just I'm willing to play it even if it's average. Take all those words, combine them, and we'll give it a shot. And so far, we have not been turned off. We have not been displeased. Been a lot of weird surprises, really slick looking. And just the environment of the space station that you're on is stellar. It's just cool. And I've got it running on my PC right now in 4K resolution, and it is screaming. Wow. So that I'm really happy about that. I am geeking out.
How do you feel about Bethesda's kind of decision last October to kind of withhold it, withhold releases like this until a day of or shortly before?
Well, I mean, they clearly don't know who I am. Like, I feel like I should be getting all of the video games super early. Yeah. I actually, honestly, I think for the most part, game studios don't need to just hand games to whomever. I think what's really important is understanding how people find and discover games. And in a Twitch and streaming era, that whole idea of having to hand a game to a single magazine for an exclusive and expect people to read that and have that drive the sales, it's not the same as people just who are big fans starting out, going trial by fire, being willing to be beta testers for broken games. Dishonored 2 in particular, launched messily, and people were still willing to buy it and sort of jump in and figure it out there. I think that's a developer by developer strategy. I will say I'm playing another game right now, which I'll talk about next week. I'm really enjoying it by a small indie team, but it's got one bug. And because I got it kind of in advance, I was able to reach out to these developers and say, hey guys, this one thing keeps messing up when I play. And they've been back and forth with me. They asked for the crash logs on my computer. They were helping me diagnose it. And that to me is something interesting from a review perspective in the modern gaming era, because games don't always work. You put them in, even in your Xbox or PlayStation, let alone your computer, you'll put it in and it'll have a bug or it won't work with this driver, that sort of thing. And I do think when a game maker doesn't get a game into people's hands early, that's never going to reflect as well as a developer who is even helping the press and the early lookers go, oh, we want everyone to really enjoy this game. We are dedicated to making this game work on launch day and in the weeks to come. So I just think that's sort of a thing that doesn't get reflected when you type a number into a review. You know, when a review ends with 8.5 out of 10, you don't factor in developer didn't respond to bug report into that score necessarily. But that matters way more in the modern era than it did back in the 80s and 90s when you just assumed your cartridge would work.
Right. Yeah. Very good point. Cool. Well, now I have a few things that I wish that I could play, but I don't have either of these VR systems. Well, I guess one is PC. So
yeah, every week I tell you guys, come on over to my creepy place, board games, VR, shut all the lines, keep it dark.
It'll be a weekend of games.
Weekend creeping out in Sam's.
He has a futon.
Was that?
He has a futon.
Oh, well, that's good. Okay. Well, then I'm sold. This is information that was withheld from.
Oh, right.
God, this whole segment's going on my Tinder profile.
All right. Sam Iskovich, Ars Technica, also can be found on Tinder. No, just kidding. At Sam Red on Twitter. Twitter is what I meant to say. Thank you, Sam.
Yeah, get the Jack from Twitter, I'm sure, appreciates that one. See you guys. I'll be talking about the game Strafe next week. It is really, really good. That's all I can say for now.
Sounds good, Sam. Have a great weekend.
Take care.
Bye.
We got so much feedback about two-factor authentication and password manager. I don't know. It rivaled the Princess Leia action figure.
There
feedback.
Was a lot to comment on from yesterday, apparently.
yes. But William, so of course, well, I'll fill you in. We were talking about how two-factor was kind of hard. But what I really meant was using LastPass was hard. Using two-factor with LastPass. So we kind of said, yeah, you know, it's hard. But William from Connecticut writes, strong authentication using one-time passwords distributed via SMS resists the kind of attacks using phishing and fraudulent credential replay, the attack implicated in most of the breaches that we have seen over the last 3 years. Please do not make perfect security the enemy of the good. One-time passwords via SMS are dramatically more secure than reusable passwords. So we were saying that it was, sending the two-factor through SMS was not as secure as using,
using like an authenticator app, which I mean, I still feel that way. Like I use both SMS and I use an authenticator app, and I much prefer using the authenticator app. But, and I think I said this yesterday, and I'm happy William has written in before, and he's definitely used that term before, don't make perfect security the enemy of the good, because it's a really great point, right? Some good security is better than no security, or you know what I mean? Security doesn't have to be absolutely perfect for it to still be mostly effective in most cases. Mm-hmm. And the reality is that you don't really see a whole lot of the intrusions via SMS. But the potential is there. And for that reason, I just wish that there were more usage of the authenticator apps as opposed to SMS. Because if the potential is there, why not? But I appreciate that it exists either way. And I would much rather do SMS two-factor than not do it at all. Mm. So
Davinia also wrote in. She said, I agree with Megan. It's exhausting. Part of it is my own fault. I have 27 character password alongside other shorter passwords that I use. However, the two-factor part takes a while because for me, because sometimes it just doesn't work the first time. I'll be waiting for a text that doesn't arrive, so I switch to the email option, and then the system tells me I took too long to authenticate. This doesn't happen with every app or service I use, but sometimes I'm not willing to take that chance and opt out of two-factor authentication. I think that that is the key to that feeling. It's like, it just takes too long. I have too much to do. You know, it doesn't work one time. I'm done. I'm moving on.
Yeah.
And so, you know, you find that with a lot of technology, like Siri doesn't work.
For sure.
Like, I'm not going to use it. But this is more important. That's why I feel like it's akin to like eating your vegetables. It's like, I know I have to do it. It's the right thing to do. And for me, I also got some help. What I wasn't doing on the authentication app is with my phone or my laptop, you can say for 30 days, trust this.
Right.
And I think I just didn't see that. I don't know why, but I did that. So now I don't have to do it every time. And I just have to do it every 30 days.
Yeah, and maybe on different platforms you set different time limits, right? Like my desktop computer that's at home and it's always at home in my living room, I could probably set that for a really long time or maybe never log out. Although I still like to every once in a while keep it there just to keep that challenge going for when I use the service. But my desktop computer at home, I feel less of a need to have to re-authenticate every single time I open the browser. My mobile device might be more likely to fall into somebody else's hands, might be more important to have it reauthenticate sooner, quicker, or more rapidly as a result of that. So it depends on what device you're using.
Yeah. Well, for a while, my Apple Watch, I used to be able to authenticate through my Apple Watch, and I just pressed and it authenticated. And they took that away, or maybe I turned that setting off or something. But that was so easy because it was just like I didn't even have to pick up my phone. Or, you know, sometimes I don't have my phone nearby, and, you know, I just have my laptop and my watch. And I wish I had that back, but it's probably not as secure either, I guess.
Right, yeah. Amazon Echo might soon arrive with a touchscreen, and we have an image of it. Well, somebody else did, and we'll show it to you. But first, let's take a minute to thank Tracker, the sponsor of this episode. We've all been there. We've cut it too close. Whatever it is we have going on throughout the day, we've got so many things stacked up. Do a little bit of this, eat that breakfast, catch a little bit of the news, throw everything I need for work into my bag, and I'm going to make it out the door just in time to make it to work. But then I don't have the keys to the front door. I have no idea where they are, and my whole plan is foiled once again, and now I'm going to be late. Great. Well, we've all been there in our own story, and now with Tracker, you never have to worry about that. You don't have to worry about losing your things again. The Tracker Bravo is a coin-sized device constructed with anodized aluminum for the thinnest, most durable tracking, so you can locate anything, misplaced keys, wallets, bags, computers, in seconds. Just pair Tracker to your smartphone, attach it to any item, and you'll find its precise location with a tap of a button, and that's all that needs to be done. Lose your phone, you press the button on your Tracker device, or you can even ask your Amazon Echo, and your phone will ring even if you left it on silent. Your phone can track up to 10 different devices at once, and family sharing lets you track the same Tracker Bravo from multiple phones, so you can all keep tabs on the remote, let's say, as one example. Customized two-way separation alerts so you're notified before you leave your item behind. With over 4.5 million devices shipped, Tracker has the largest crowd GPS network in the world, so your lost item shows up on a map, even if it's miles away. The Tracker app records its last known location. When another Tracker user comes within 100-foot range of your item, you'll receive a GPS update of where your item's located. The distance indicator now on the Tracker app will show you if you're getting closer to your item, so you know that you're close, finally. And with a 30-day money-back guarantee, there's no reason not to give it a try. Stop losing your stuff today. Go to thetracker.com and enter promo code TNT. You're going to get a free Tracker Bravo with any order. That's thetracker.com. Promo code TNT for your free Tracker Bravo with any order. And we thank Tracker for their support. TNT's fan of the day is M. Walker, who sent us this picture saying he listens via his Bluetooth-connected Android phone streaming to his Forerunner. He listens when driving to work or between clients to catch up on the tech news. That's why we exist, so you can catch up on the tech news between everything else you have going on in your life. Show us how you watch or listen to TNT. Just record a video or take a picture of yourself or your setup. Post it on Instagram, Google+, Twitter, or Facebook. Use the hashtag HowIWatchTNT, and we'll find it.
The website AVTV News is showing off some leaked photos of what they're claiming is the new Amazon Echo with a screen.
This thing's going to look awesome.
Yeah, aren't you excited?
I'm so excited.
No, it's just not look that awesome. We've heard for a while that the Echo with a screen is coming. We've also heard there will be a new Siri home device with a screen. Now, this leaked photo is a little more believable only because the same leaker showed off a realistic picture of the Echo Look camera for your closet. He showed that off on March 6th, which was almost 2 months before Amazon actually released the Look, and it was that camera. Well-known leaker Ev Leaks cleaned up the image a bit, and we can see that on Twitter. It's even cleaned up. It does not look that beautiful, but neither does the Amazon Echo or the Echo Dot. I mean, I have to say, the Amazon is not beautiful with their designs. Their hardware or software, frankly.
But man, the Echo, I don't know. I kind of like the design of the Echo. I think it's endearing in its own way. I mean, it's definitely kind of an industrial look, but for some reason, I like that. I don't like this at all. This looks like a 90s something. Yeah, this looks, I don't even know what I'm looking at. And I don't know that I would want that in my kitchen, but who knows? I mean, I guess the point is that it's an Echo with a touchscreen, and that could actually be very useful for certain things. Right. If you're in the kitchen, you know, displaying a recipe, because I don't know if you've ever tried to make a recipe with your Echo, like, repeating steps to you. I've done it just to test it out on the Google Home, and it's not the easiest thing in the world. Like, it would be much easier to have something to reference.
Yes, absolutely. But they say that this might also have phone capabilities. Like, that's been rumored. Yes, so,
like a video phone.
So I don't know. I mean, I like my Amazon Echo, despite the fact that it's not as beautiful as like a, you know, an iPhone or a Samsung phone. But yeah, I don't know. Rumors say it'll be between $200 and $300. We'll see when we see.
So the Echo Look, you're not interested in, because it has a camera. This has a camera too.
Right, but the Echo Look is designed for your closet, and if you're interested in the dystopian future of what happens, you can, you know, watch the video that we made of it. It's terrifying.
It is terrifying. It shook me to my core.
Yes.
It's on YouTube, right?
It's on YouTube. Yes.
You can go to the Twit, mm-hmm. The Twit YouTube page. What is mm-hmm. it? The This Week in Tech. Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
Twit
I think
Network.
If you look, search for Echo Look 9000. That's how
that's
you find
it. That's it.
Yeah,
yes.
Echo Look 9000. You'll see how I feel about it.
Definitely seek that out, because mm-hmm. you want to see what this dystopian future is all about. Mm-hmm. It's pretty great. And by great, I mean scary. TNT records live every Monday through Friday at 4 p.m. Pacific, 7 p.m. Eastern, 2300 UTC at twit.tv/live. Be part of the show by emailing us, tnt@twit.tv. Leave us a short voicemail, 260-TNT-SHOW, and find us on Twitter any time of the day or night at Tech News Today TV.
I'm not at any time of the day or night.
It wakes me up. If I'm asleep.
You're going to respond?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, excellent.
No.
I am just spending all night at our subreddit. That's where I am, not on Twitter. TechNewsToday.reddit.com. Comment on the stories. And, of course, subscribe to our show, twit.tv/TNT. We want to hear. And if you want to leave a review somewhere. I think that's important, too, so that if other people happen upon and they're looking through and they've never heard of us and they hear that you like it, they might be persuaded.
Yeah.
And you can tweet at me. I'm at Megan Maroney.
Or you can, you know, persuade them. We don't mind. You do what you do. I'm at Jason Howell on Twitter. Thanks to Kara Cole for being our technical director for the day. Thank you, Kara. Thanks to Mario for helping out here in the studio and scrolling words on the screen. And thanks to Kevin for editing the show. And, of course, thanks to you. No, really, thank you for talking tech with us today. We'll see you all on Monday. Have a great weekend. Bye, everyone.